Can we move that slide then, please, Rhiannon?
Yep. Oh, do you want to start sharing?
No, I'd like to see the white of people's eyes.
Okay, yeah, I'll take it off.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Graeme Tiffany. I should say that I'm very pleased to join you all today. As much as I'm sitting here in Leeds in the north of England, one of the lockdown areas, I've got a great interest in London. I was a detached youth worker in Tower Hamlets, East India Dock Road area, for nearly 10 years, and it's always been an area of the world that I've got a great fondness for, is London. So I look forward to hearing your stories about what's happening in London these days. Yes, I worked in detached youth work for something like 17 years in total, and since then I've worked on an independent basis. So I'm a trainer, I'm a consultant, I'm a freelance lecturer, I'm involved in research, all things to do with youth and community work, but especially detached youth work and street-based youth work, for which I actually do quite a lot of work in other European countries. And I will mention at the end of this an international webinar about street-based youth work that I'm going to be facilitating at the end of this month. So I'm keen to find out a little bit about all you guys and to hear you say a little bit about who you are and the organisation that you work for. Just a very quick reference to, if you like, what you've been doing work-wise. And what I mean by that is the kind of work that you've been doing since this dreaded pandemic affected all our lives. And finally, if you've got just a thought about something that you remember from the last session you did with my colleague Emily at the Fed. Oh, I should say that I've also spent 20 years working with the Federation for Detached Youth Work. I'd like to hear that as well. So just to repeat, just quickly say who you are, what your organisation is, a little bit about the work that you've been doing since COVID-19 came on the scene, and perhaps just a very brief mention about anything that you remember that was of significance to you from the last session you did. So can we have a volunteer to start us off, and I'll just take a few notes about the things that people say. Thank you. Somebody give me a wave. I tell you what, shall I pick on some? Shall I pick on somebody? I tell you what I'll do. Just so I don't get lost, I'm going to go across from start to finish in terms of people's names here. So that looks like Helen to me. You've got a short straw. You can start us off. Tell us who you are, what your organisation is, a little bit about the work you've done, anything from last time. And by magic, you'll have to unmute as well. Thank you. Go on then, Helen. Let's hear from you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Sorry, my laptop's like freaking out a little bit.
No worries.
So I'm from the Rise Collective, as is Marla, who's in this session as well. And we are a really, really tiny charity working with young people across London. We do a lot of different creative projects both in person and events. And since lockdown, we've kind of switched to do a lot of online stuff. So using different kind of social media platforms and Zooms and things like that. And we work with young people, mainly young people who are experiencing marginalisation, using different forms of creativity to support connecting to your voice, expressing positive well-being, skills development, gaining opportunities, be it kind of mentoring or networking or kind of informal work experience type training stuff.
Anything from the last session, Helen?
I wasn't actually in the last session.
Let's go to your colleague, Marla.
Hi, I'm Marla, and I was lucky then that Helen was, because she's so much better at explaining.
Don't repeat anything.
What we do. No, I'm not going to. So, yeah, that's what RISE does. And actually, this is our first attendance at one of these sessions. So I can't even answer that question. But good to be here.
I'm sure we'll hear from you later. I've got Jordana next. Speak to me, Jordana.
Hello. Hi. My name's Jordana. Yeah, I'm from St. Andrew's Church. We have a community youth club in the Fulham area on the West Ken and Gibbs Green Estate. And we've been running it for 3.5 years. We have a girls club and a mixed sports-based youth club on a Friday. And we started off doing detached work at the very beginning, and then it just fizzled out. And I just want to kind of start to reignite that again. I'm youth and community worker, and it's mostly sports based, but we do other activities indoors, and it's for ages 8 to 16. Yeah, young people age 8 to 16, or as long as they stay. They're coming to 17, and I'm like hoping that they'll hang on so we can extend our age range.
Did you participate in the last session, Jordan?
Yes, I did.
Any memories of that?
Yeah, it was so great to be in the breakout room with two ladies who already were doing detached work. And one of the key things, that a piece of advice they gave, was to be authentic. And also to also respect that when we are working in detached work, that we're kind of entering into their space. It's so to kind of assume more of a servant posture rather than I'm in authority and I know it all kind of thing. I think those two things really stuck with me, and just to kind of let them lead and give them, you know, just to serve them in a way that we can be a bit humble and allow them to tell us what they need and what they want. And yeah, just being authentic.
Lovely. Thank you. Sally.
Hello, I was with Jordana on the last one, and I'm one of the ladies who actually has started to do detached work.
Okay. Fine, let's go on then. Peter?
Yeah, hi, I'm Peter. I'm from an organisation called You First. We're based in the Borough of Lewisham. In regards to detached street-based work, obviously, due to obviously the current climate, we put a halt to it. So a lot of the stuff we're doing now is online. So we're doing like a lot of stuff on Zoom's virtual sessions, yeah, which we kind of like did over the summer, which was great. But first and foremost, I like obviously more kind of obviously one-to-one or kind of like obviously physical contact rather than obviously online. So it worked under the current climate, but obviously I like to get back into obviously youth work.
Okay.
Personal centred youth work.
Peter, did you attend the last session?
Unfortunately, I didn't know.
No problem. Okay, the next one on my screen is Steve. Steve Walker is a colleague of mine. I'm not going to ask him to introduce himself, but he's going to just help along with Rhiann. If you've got any kind of commentary, there he is waving, please, or any kind of questions, put them in the chat, and Steve and Rhiann will keep an eye on that. I'll try to keep an eye on that, but they'll assist me. So do feel free to use that function, and then we can get this as dialogical as possible. Okay, next one along my list is Aslis. Have I said that correctly? Can we try somebody else? What about Tracy? Tracy, can you hear me?
Tracy has wrote in the chat that she's having mic problems.
Problem. Okay, no worries. Tracy, can you just indicate in the chat that you can hear okay? That would be good. Let's go to Joseph.
Hiya.
Tell us a bit about yourself, Joseph.
Yeah, so I work for Victim Support, work with children, young people who've been affected by homicide. I'm fairly new to the role, but at the minute we're doing mainly work in schools where we're able to. Previously been a social worker and obviously did work with young people then. I did attend the last session. One of the parts that stuck with me was talking about meeting young people where they're at, not where you want them to be. I like that. I think it's very succinct and sums up what our work should be aiming to do. So it was good, a good session.
Super, thank you. Margaret. Okay. I think most of you will be able to see that on the chat function.
Yeah.
Are you able to speak to us, Margaret? Or are you happy to just comment in the chat? Whatever people are happy with. Okay, no problem. But again, this is, you know, we've all got different sort of levels of technology. It's become a big issue, especially for schools and all the youth workers who are doing digital youth work. This sense of diversity in terms of the technology young people have got, in terms of the work that we've done in Leeds. You know, we've literally got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families without any kind of technology. With 700,000 families in Britain today without the technology to learn online. So this kind of concept of digital poverty we're thinking about. Ashley.
Hello, I'm Ashley. I work with you first. I work alongside Peter. Okay. We're on the street-based team. So I lead and manage the street-based team. So currently since March, we've kind of just been off ground, not delivering no street-based. But I say that being said, we are preparing to go back out. So hopefully just before Christmas, the latest, we should be back out.
Okay.
We should be beginning to go back out. So things are just being put in place for that to take place and for that to happen. A lot of our sessions, alongside the street base, we had our pop-up youth club as well. That was based within the centre of the community in Lewisham, in the town centre, based in the leisure centre. So that worked really well with our street based. So a lot of the stuff when we was engaging with young people on street based, if we had to signpost or they had some needs or etc., we could direct them back to the youth club. Say for example, young people who we engaged with during some of the street based said they wanted to look for jobs, etc. So we then set in place with them a day or a set day that we would help them look for jobs so they could come back to the youth club on a specific day and we could do a job search session. But that worked really well. But things have changed. The leisure centre's closed. But there's still youth work to be done. All of our youth club sessions, as Peter said, is taking place online at the moment via Zoom. Well, for our particular team, other teams in our organisation, they have opened back up the doors of the youth clubs and the youth centres, obviously with just the measures in place, the COVID measures under the NYA in place. But doors have been opened. In regards to the last session, we was not there, but I wasn't there, but I have had, I think it's the same Emily, if it's under the Fed, who initially, when we started the street-based, she done our team's detached youth work training. She'd done her whole training. So that was about maybe the February 2019, around that time. So she'd done the training for our team, for the whole of our team, for the street-based, if it's the same. Just going back. So I guess today we're joining as part of the refresher, getting ready to go back. And since the training was so long ago that we had, but I guess, yeah, that's a bit of info.
Splendid. Thank you very much for that, Ashley. Okay, that leaves Karen.
Hiya, sorry. So yeah, I'm Karen. I work for the Newham Youth Empowerment Detached team. So I am already a detached youth worker, although I'm new to the team. So I moved to the team from centre-based youth work within Newham Youth Empowerment Service, but I moved there temporarily for the coronavirus response, because we were, after a bit of time seeking the correct permissions, we were able to go out and still do street-based youth work.
Are you a colleague of Chelsea and...
That's right. Yeah, Chelsea, Josh, Vanita and Mo.
Okay, splendid. Right. I'll just go back to Sally, just in case you wanted to add to what she's contributed in the chat. Sally, do you want to say anything or do you want to add anything entirely?
The only thing I'd add is that when we had the 40 to 80 young people in our youth group, they're now unengaged, if that makes sense, disengaged, or they're not engaged in anything, whereas they used to come to the youth group. So that's why we started to do detached work, so we could go out and see where they were.
Okay.
Right. And also we are now working quite closely with the PRUs.
Okay.
So right, that we can see what they're up to.
Okay, just a little bit from me about a few things that I've learned from listening to you. First one, Sally's final comment. Sally, if you could just wait for a minute, please.
Pardon?
Could you just put your mute back on for a second?
Yes.
Thank you. Sally talks about this, an attempt to go out to engage with those who perhaps we previously had relationships with in buildings. Okay, it's not an unreasonable assumption to think that those that we've got existing relationships with in building-based settings, when we go out, we might meet them. However, I certainly won't want to argue that you should be confident in that. What we're picking up from detached youth workers all across the country is that actually, very often, those that they have experience of working with in building-based settings, they're simply not present on the streets. So what's important to remember in this context is that it's very likely we're going to meet young people who are new to us. And in that sense, we're all starting out in detached youth work. We have to think about establishing new relationships and whatever else. And of course, as others have said, especially those who've made references to the concept of territory and space, the very circumstances of our engagement, working with young people in public space, it does change the dynamics. You know, the buildings that we work in tend to exert a kind of an environment of authority. It's just like being at school to some degree for a young person. The buildings and the walls are quite symbolic. And when we remove those walls, when we go out into public space, these kinds of issues about power and authority and control, they change. So we have to change and we have to start thinking differently. So we're going to consider those kinds of things. My final point would be about this sort of sense of where young people are at. One of the words that was written in one of the most important books, research projects about detached youth work, the Joseph Rowntree research into detached youth work, was the word territory. And generally we would think of territory as a physical place, perhaps an estate or whatever. But when we wrote that in that research programme, we tried to use the word territory to represent all sorts of different things. Certainly the geography of where we work, but also the sense that young people's territory is their understanding of their needs, their understanding of their interests, their understanding of their ideas and dreams and fears and whatever. So it's a very expansive concept. So to work where they're at, it's not just to be where they are at physically, on a street corner, for example. It's also to try to be where they're at in terms of their thinking about all those things. Okay, so the plan for today is I'm going to pose you, initially at least, a few kinds of scenarios that you might come across, have to think about, have to engage with, have to work with. And I'm going to try to, as much as possible, encourage you guys to discuss these things simplistically. You know, what do you think it would be like to be in that situation? What do you think you would do? What do you think you would not do? And so on and so on and so on. So in a sense, we're practicing in relation to a series of scenarios. And it may be that when you go out onto the streets and into public spaces, these scenarios will reveal themselves to you. And hopefully in that sense, what we do today is going to be useful. But for me personally, it's much more about getting this kind of fluidity of thinking so that you're thinking flexibly in an adaptable manner, because there's a million scenarios that I can't offer to you today, nor could I possibly offer you those things. And that's to say that if ever there was a job, ever there was a practice for which we need to be what I call uncertainty appreciative, it's got to be detached youth work. There are huge swathes of time where you're never going to know quite what's going on. So it's not so much about looking for a handbook about how to approach given situations. It's more about what you do with your thinking. How am I going to think at that time? One of our colleagues here today, he mentioned, Joseph, I think it was, he's got a background in social work. Social workers will talk to you, especially in the context of of COVID-19, they'll talk about working on a case-by-case scenario, situation. And what that means is that we have to think about every single circumstance, every single individual young person differently. You know, we have to hear what they're saying. We can't roll out a kind of a regime of a systematic regime in relation to each and every one of them. I don't like the language of caseload in youth work. I never have done. I think it takes us into a form of social work that's not really what's true to youth work's history, but in the sense of case by case, situation by situation, that's what we need from good detached youth work, to be responsive to the detail of the circumstances. So I'll probably leave you with this word, which is the what might you do, rather than I think there are some circumstances where we need to say what we should do, but more importantly, for learning, we have to say what might we do, and that way we can get a whole series of different ideas from different people. Now, I'm going to start off with the kind of elephant in the room, which of course is COVID-19. Most of you have either started tentatively to think about working out on the streets, others are planning to do so, but the context that we all have to work in is COVID-19. My first question really is about, are we clear about what the regulations say about what we can and what we cannot do? I'm just going to show you quickly two slides and then we'll come back to our chat. And If I can just ask Rhianne, can you see this, Rhianne?
I can't see it.
Oh dear. Right. Let me try again. Here it is. How about that one?
Yeah, it's coming up now.
Splendid.
It's
okay. So, obviously, we need to be cognizant and aware of national government, Public Health England guidelines, just as citizens, I would say. But there is really good guidance for youth workers. And the primary source, generically, for detached youth, for youth work in general, is the National Youth Agency, which the Federation for Detached Youth Work has been supporting and collaborating with for quite a while now. And if you were to go, as I actually suggest you do on a day-to-day basis, to the NYA website, you'll see what the current level of concern is about COVID-19. And as of today, the readiness level is A, okay, which is effectively amber in a traffic light scale of red, amber and green. There are conditions that are present all over the country, not as extreme as they were under the initial phase of lockdown that we all remember, but certainly we're not able in the current circumstances to be free to do whatever we would have done before COVID-19. Okay, now, what you will have here, and there's the various references, working in what are called COVID secure venues, where you've taken a whole series of precautions, is currently allowed. However, let me turn that into a question. What are you allowed to do in a building currently? Can anybody from the group offer me answer to that question? Very simple question. What are the current restrictions? What are you able to do in a building in the context of government coronavirus guidance and law? Anybody got an answer to that question? Just unmute and shout up if you want to have a go. Okay, I'm going to give you the answer, but let me say that you need to know these things. And if you are going to engage with young people in the current context, you need to be absolutely sure about what the guidance says about what you cannot do. There is a reference on the image to what it says, maximum bubbles of 15 youth workers and staff. Now, what to be precise about that one, what that means is that if you are essentially working in what for business people would be called a work context, where people are signing in and signing up for various things, you can work outside of the standard rule of six. What about that question? Let's do that one. Anybody, what does the rule of six say?
The rule of six in general?
Yes, in general.
Only six people in your home or outside, like, home-wise, it talks about home. So in your own personal socials, it seems that that rule of six, well, yeah, as far as I'm aware, where the rule of six stand is in your personal kind of gathering. So not included in work, not included on the bus or on the train as such. But if it's a personal thing, then that's when the rule of six stands. At home, outside, in outside gatherings, in your home, indoor gatherings, I guess, well, restaurants, but yeah, I'm more personal in that sense.
Okay, that's pretty good. Yeah. Simplistically, you are able to gather in groups of no more than six, indoors and outdoors, provided you follow the everyday social distancing guidelines. Okay? It does not mean that you're exempt from social distancing guidelines, but it does mean that you can gather. Currently in Leeds, where I live, even this is not allowed. You know, we're at a higher level. And that's an important point, because there is some discussion at the moment, you'll know, about further restrictions in London. So you all must keep abreast of those kinds of things. Of course, there are exceptions to this, the so-called concept of the support bubble and whatever else. Yeah, attending births and funerals and so on and so on. But what I recommend is that you actually do check on a day-to-day basis, just to be clear about what you can't do. Okay, second one. This is documentation, and I think Steve's probably going to put, should be able to put the link to this into the chat. This was something that Steve, I and other colleagues from the Federation put together for the National Youth Agency. And it looks very specifically at the generic guidance for detached youth workers, which sits, if you like, in parallel with that for youth workers generally, the reference I've just given you. So it's well worth having a look at that. There's really good quality material there about risk assessment and whatever else. Okay. I'll stop sharing for a moment and we'll go back to there it is. Okay. So I'm going to ask now a couple of specific questions about the kind of typical environments that we might work in as detached workers currently. I'm thinking, for example, about, let's say, the local park. What kind of things might you need to consider if you were to meet and engage with young people in the local park? Anybody got any kind of comment on that? Let me just quickly intervene so I don't lose it. There's a reference to the rule of six about adults. Actually, the rule of six includes children. What you'll find in Scotland, for example, is that the rule of six, those six people are adults and young people can be added onto that. For example, the children of parents or whatever. But the strict rule in England is that the rule of six includes young people. The implications of that are obvious. That means that if you are working on the street as, say, two detached youth workers, you shouldn't be talking to a group of more than four, okay? The caveat, which is why I showed you the NYA guidance, is that if there's some kind of organised activity, for example, I do some part-time outdoor education work with young people and adults, and where they're signing in for certain activities, that number can be increased in line with the NYA guidance. But obviously, in most detached youth work sessions, people are not signing in, young people are not signing into a detached youth work session. You have to treat them as ordinary citizens, civilians on the street at any one time, in which case the rule of six applies. But let's go to the question about working in a park. What further considerations might you need to consider if you were going to engage with young people in, say, a local park? Anybody chip in anything for that, please? Who wants to have a go?
Yeah, I was going to comment, just kind of like being social aware, maybe doing some sort of a recce. So hypothetically, during certain times, the park can get very busy or it can be less busy. So just kind of being aware of obviously what kind of times you're doing your work from, and also in regards to obviously keeping to the regulations and so forth, maybe approaching a smaller group rather than a larger group, or if you want to talk to a particular group, maybe kind of like if there's a group of like 10 young people, maybe draw attention to maybe a couple of them rather than trying to engage the whole group, if that makes sense.
Right, that's super, Peter, thank you. You've got quite a few of the key points there. The first is not to simply rely on the guidance that I've already introduced you to as a kind of be-all and end-all situation. You've got to use your head, yeah? What that means is you've got to use your eyes and you've got to have a look. Is the park crowded, for example, at this time? Yeah. Is there any signage that the local park keepers have put up about their concerns about certain areas that might include not using certain areas or encouraging you to use other areas? And then Peter also makes an important point about how that potential for the park being crowded may actually be to do with the time of the day, in which case the reconnaissance, the checking it out, as Peter also talks about, is so valuable. If you know from visiting the park in advance that at certain times of the day, it could be really quite busy, I don't know, a Saturday afternoon or something like that, then that's the time you need to be somewhat more cautious. I'm not going to say for one moment that you should avoid them at that time, but you really need to have your kind of caution meter working in those cases. It may be that there's certain areas of the park that are more busy than others. So you might want to say, if you're going to talk to young people, you know, let's move over to this area or whatever. So you're displaying through your physical behaviour really kind of good signs. The way you stand in relation to your colleague is to model good social distancing behaviour. If you're close to your colleague, it's communicating a message to young people that it's okay to do this and that and the other. But look at the areas of the park, look at the different entrances, exits or whatever, and make your judgments, which goes back to the earlier point I made, that there's no real science in this. In terms of how you play your cards when you're working, you've got to do this kind of judgment making all the time. Anybody got anything else?
Yeah, just a couple of practical things. The weather.
Absolutely, thank you.
If it's pouring down with rain as it has been, the park might not be ideal, unless there's an undercover area. I guess accessibility, how easy it is to get there, and also how easy is it to find a group in the middle of a park?
Yeah.
So you might want to meet maybe outside of a park and then go in once you've done your recce and everything and you know where you're going. Yeah. And also, I guess, where is the park and who is such an open public space? Who can see you in that park having a youth work session?
Yeah.
Sometimes people don't want to be seen, do they?
That's important. Again, there's a lot of detail and nuance in Marla's comments there. The issue of visibility has long since been debated in detached youth work. There's a school of thought that says that, for example, if a detached youth worker wears some kind of uniform, a jacket or whatever, that creates a focus, a visible focus that gives confidence to young people. But on the extreme end of detached youth work, there's another school of thought, and there are a significant number of cases of this in the past, is if you're engaging with young people who are perhaps in conflict with others, then you act as a kind of a beacon for others who might be seeking out an individual young person because they're in conflict with them. So again, you've got to be very, very careful. There's the sense that you can arrange to meet people in a park. That can be useful sometimes. But and the other point was about the weather. Of course, the weather is always a consideration for detached youth workers. But my advice in relation to the weather is, once again, as both of you have said so far, you need to observe behaviours. I think in all my years in detached youth work, it continued to surprise me that young people would be out in all sorts of weathers. And I did very quickly realise that my desire not to be outside had to be secondary to my job, which was to be present. That probably means you need a good jacket or something like that. But I don't want to hear a detached youth worker abandoning, you know, working outdoors because of the weather. Certainly, if there are young people out there. And I repeat the point that forever and a day, you know, you'll find young people out in all sorts of weathers, which is probably a sign, a signal, whatever you want to call it, that there's some other things going on in their lives where, if you like, in ordinary circumstances, most people would retreat indoors. So when there are those that don't in inclement weather, there's probably something going on there that we want to talk about and perhaps explore with them. Okay, let's crack on a little bit. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you something that was written by a colleague of ours in the wider world of... Right, can somebody just shout? Rhian, can you tell me if that one's...
Yes, it's worked.
That one visible?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Now, I like this. This is a really good example of thoughtful, critically thinking detached youth workers. This was sent to the Federation for Detached Youth Work by Chris McIntosh, who's the head of the Detached Youth Work Programme at YPAC in Manchester. A very, very thoughtful man. A guy who's worked in detached youth work, as have his team, for many, many years. And he wrote to us and he said, what we have seen is a whole series of different behaviours in relation to COVID-19. And we have sat as a team and reflected on all these kinds of interactions. And we've come up with a theory that there are essentially five sets of reactions to the reality in which we find ourselves. Okay, now, prior to me showing you this slide, we could have got into a conversation, well, given the various guidance and whatever else, and given a kind of the judgments that we typically make, we should do X, Y, and Z. So what Chris is arguing, what Chris is introducing into the conversation, is the sense that you're likely to meet young people who are have got different attitudes, different sets of behaviour in relation to the guidance that everybody in the country is supposed to be adhering to. So we're going to have a quick look at these. I'm just going to quickly read them out so everybody's clear about them. And then I'm going to ask Rhian just to separate us out into groups of three, and I'm just going to give you a few minutes to think about how you would react to a group of young people exhibiting these behaviours, saying these kinds of things. I want you to think about what you would do, what you wouldn't do, what you would say, what you wouldn't say. Okay, simple as that. So just to help you be clear about these at least theoretical five groups of young people. Chris says that in their work, there is a group of young people who express fear about the situation in which we're all in. They're very concerned about the effects of the virus on themselves personally, not just perhaps on grandparents, but on themselves personally. They actually fear death and illness. Now, we know, of course, that's unlikely, but nonetheless, there is a significant minority of young people who display this kind of fear. Generally, they stay at home, which is an interesting question for how the detached youth worker works. Chris's team argue that perhaps they might be influenced by the family perspectives or whatever. So, you know, if you end up in this group discussing that, have a think about how you'd engage with that, really. Number two, ignorance. These are groups of young people or individual young people who are unaware of the impact the virus could have. They know something about what's going on, but through other people's information, and perhaps getting their messages secondhand, perhaps through social media, perhaps through their peers, friends, or whatever. And they tend to be those who, again, according to YPAC, they've got this kind of egocentric thinking. They tend to think of themselves first and foremost. They're typically not engaged with outside friendship groups, typically not engaged with the wider community. Third group, what he calls the ambivalent group. They didn't really see the concern about these issues, okay? They recognize these issues, but they're not particularly concerned. They're out and about, they know a bit about the risks, but they weren't actively considering the consequences, what he calls a passive response. Fourth group, distance. They are concerned about the virus, but believe it's kind of somewhere else. It's not happening where they are, it's happening elsewhere. They experience no immediate impact from it. Again, it seems to be distant. It's on the television. It's in other people's conversations. It's not in their reality. And he says there's a classic quote that from individuals express this kind of distancing. I am worried about it, but I don't know anybody who's got it, so I don't really think it's going to affect me. I think I'll be okay. And finally, somebody put it to me that Donald Trump falls into this category actually this morning. Invincibility. People who know the risks and understand it can result in death, but thought it simply would not happen to them. It would not impact on them. And they'd be okay even if they got it. Yeah, death is for somebody else. They didn't need to adhere to anything because, as I've said, it doesn't affect them. So I'm going to ask Rhianne now to split people up into five groups, and you'll be randomly allocated to these five concepts, okay? Am I right in saying that people will still be able to see the screen, Rhianne? I think they will, won't they?
I'm not too sure. I think it might be best if we put it in the chat and okay. Then be able to see.
Are you in a position to do that? Or I can do that, can I?
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay. So when you're ready, Rhianne, we're just going to have 5 minutes. So in your groups of three, just imagine you're out on a detached youth work session and you start thinking, well, oh, hang on a minute, that stuff from Chris McIntosh in Manchester, I think we're dealing with a group who are expressing these kinds of ideas, attitudes and behaviours. And to repeat, I want you to think about what you'd do, what you wouldn't do, behaviourally that is, what you'd say and what you wouldn't say, okay? And put that into the context of what we've already spoken about. Apologies for not giving you enough time in the first instance, but hopefully now we've had a chance for at least a little bit of discussion. I might begin to reflect on Tracy and I's discussion, and hopefully that set the scene for others to feed back in relation to what they talked about. Tracy and I were in group three, where we discussed the group that were said to be ambivalent. They didn't really see the concern. They were out and about in public space. Tracy was reflecting on groups who were there present in the adventure playground that she works in. So they knew a little bit about what was going on, but they took this kind of passive response to it, not actively considering the consequences. And Tracy described how she told a story, a terrible story about the loss of a family member of hers. Clearly a very, very powerful story. What's interesting about this particular story is it quite clearly provided food for thought to young people, but we might It's difficult to anticipate how young people are going to react to such a powerful story. What Tracy says is that she realised that many of the young people who are interested in the pain that she herself had suffered, which in one sense is an important part of the story, but it's perhaps a different kind of conversation from one designed to get them to explore their own kind of thinking. The conversation then becomes about the person who's been bereaved. My response to Tracy's question was to talk about what detached youth workers often call moral language and moral conversations, where we very explicitly ask questions about relationships and how we relate to each other, and specifically how we should relate to each other, what kind of responsibilities we have to one another. That's what makes it a moral conversation. Tracy clearly was able, through her intervention, this quite difficult intervention for her, had been able to get young people to think about others. So young people came back and they spoke about elderly neighbours and the fact that they hadn't really appreciated what it must be like for them, who, like themselves as young people, were often separated from relatives, friends and relatives, because of the regulations. And that created its own kind of problems. So stories that young people were telling about having last visited relatives, and how hopefully in the fullness of time they would make more effort to think about and engage in those kinds of relationships. And the final point from our conversation was about how, in Tracy's words, the conversation started moving off topic a bit, but nonetheless, they were really engaged in conversation. So there's a kind of a tension there. Sometimes we've got to try and keep young people involved in a certain kind of conversation, but it may be that, you know, we have to allow and encourage people to explore the things that they want to talk about in connection to it. So a rich story, and one that I thank Tracy for telling me, and I hope I've done justice to it in speaking to you guys. Okay, who's got group number one? Have we a little bit of commentary about how, you know, the kind of ideas that you might have for engaging for the group who truly have very personal individual figures about death and illness? Anybody want to chip in from number one? Who have we got there?
I don't mind sharing. Okay. It was me and Peter in our group.
Lovely.
Okay, so what we talked about was that we would acknowledge the fears of the young people, but also get them to express kind of what they're thinking, what their thoughts are, to kind of have an idea of where it is they're at and where it is that they're coming from. I think in the question it mentioned the fact that a lot of their fears are kind of based on things that may be coming from home. So it'd be good to get an idea of what their thoughts are, what their thinking is. And then we also talked about, after having listened to them and acknowledged their fears, finding out about what they've been doing to protect themselves. Are they aware of precautions, COVID safe precautions, to kind of have an idea of what it is that they've been doing, and then just basically reassuring them and helping them to understand that and putting the necessary precautions in place could be something that could help them, really just reassuring them and helping them to alleviate their fears, but also allowing them to express their thoughts and feelings, understanding where they're at, empathizing with them and encouraging them is what we spoke about.
Yeah, that's super. It takes us back to this sort of statement at the beginning of our conversation about what it is to work where people are at. So this use of questions to get young people and to encourage young people to talk about their fears, not our fears, not other people's fears, but their fears, their realities, their home lives, Yeah, their thinking. This is really, really interesting for me. I've got a philosophy background, actually. This idea that we have to integrate philosophical questions into our kind of conversations. I do think it's really kind of powerful, that stuff. You know, what are you thinking? But then why are you thinking these things? Which takes you back to the comments that I've just made about where the influences come from. They might be from parents, they might be from home, they might be from relatives. But we know only too well they might be coming from social media, testing out whether or not young people have checked out the things that they believe. You know, that kind of critical thinking function. And then we've got an emotional dimension to this kind of intervention, this sense that, you know, when there's fear, you know, some kind of reassurance is really, really important. And because actually the thinking is often built upon that. That's lovely. Thank you very much. Right, let's try somebody else. What we got? Number two, the group that, not meant to be a pejorative statement, they're ignorant of what's going on in the sense of not really knowing. Have we got somebody from that group?
Yeah, number two was Jordana, Karen and Steve.
Thank you. Anybody want to have a bit of a shout from that group, please?
Okay, I will.
Lovely.
We kind of bunched the first two a little bit together in a way that we said that we would respect the social distancing. We're saying, you know, probably also make sure that if there are people that are fearful, we wouldn't, you know, be too free and good to be too close to them, but kind of respect the social distancing, maybe wear a mask, and, you know, just so they knew that we were taking it seriously as it is in their mind. And we again spoke about listening to them and giving them that space to just express more like what they were going through. I was saying I was worried about how it can become like an interview style, and I think Karen from our group was just saying, you know, just keeping it simple and just introducing, hi, how are you? And kind of keeping it relaxed. And we also spoke about that us being prepared and reassured in our own hearts and minds can come off in the conversation. If we're also fearful or we're also worried and we're not going to really do much justice to them if they have a fear as well. And so like you were saying about being clued up on the facts, and, you know, something that's not often spoken about with COVID is the recovery rate, which is 97% to 99%. And on the news, it's really focused on how many people have died and how we have to do this. And how it doesn't mean that we're ignoring that it's important. But I think if we have some figures that keep things in perspective for them, it might help them to rationalize in their own mind. That's
absolutely fantastic again. Yeah, so there's a lot going on there, isn't there? You know, this kind of, you know, it's back to working on their territory, which is a respectful thing to say in and of itself. But I do like the idea that you bodies and you move in relation to one another, the kind of a symbolic act, modelling of what it is to take these things seriously. So as I said before, if you're standing 2 meters from your colleague, yeah, this is a very symbolic kind of signal about the fact that you're taking it seriously. And also, in terms of taking it seriously, you talk about how important it is to have good knowledge, know about any changes that have existed, recently. Accessible to you at the time, perhaps a little bit of information about something that's been in the news or whatever, but this broader reality. I mean, I read recently in a scientific paper that the risk to children under 11 was roughly equivalent, the risk of death to COVID time was roughly equivalent to being struck by lightning. So there's a really interesting, it's back to a philosophical analysis of the word risk. Risk so often it becomes a negative thing, and we've got to, risk means probability, and we need to encourage some kind of conversation and awareness about actually just what we're dealing with here. It's speculated that we're going to lose 20,000 people to flu. Of course, they're going to be elderly, infirm people during the winter. You know, that's a significant part of people, but we tend not historically to have thought too much about the flu. There's something here about encouraging an exploration of the wider reality. Terrific.
We also said that we would, our conversation would be more around like how they're coping, like in regards to mental and emotional health, like, you know, what are they doing to help make the days go by, you know, like to kind of find out what their coping mechanisms are, and maybe if we could support them in that area or give ideas about, you know, things that might help.
I think that's so important as well. When I talk a moment ago about the different faces of risk, we know that there are some risks that we need to take because there are benefits associated with them. If you were to read, as I did a couple of days ago, the Mayor of London's guidance on parks, from which I got a few of the comments that I mentioned before, the very first paragraph says that parks and green spaces are crucial for people being able to take exercise and to support their mental well-being. We know that they're not getting out, and this has got to be part of our conversation with young people, looking at it from that point of view, looking at it from the other point of view, checking in the positive benefits of risk with the negative things and trying to get some kind of balanced understanding of that. And that, as you say, it's got kind of an emotional context to it. How do you feel about the risks? You know, what do you know about the risks? The feelings and the knowledge of risk. Lovely, thank you.
And what was that report, sorry, that you said you read now, that mentioned about the green spaces?
Yeah, there's I'll put that in the chat. The London Assembly's document called Social Distancing Guideline, London Parks and Green Spaces. I'll make sure that goes in the chat.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
Some very good guidance in there. So let's do number four. Rihanna, who was involved in the group we're talking about?
So we've got Helen and Joseph.
Anybody want to chip in there? Those who believe it's kind of happening elsewhere, it's on the telly, it's in America, it's not here, it's not in my life. Helen, Joseph, any commentary on that? Thank you.
Didn't actually 100% know that was the specific thing that we were talking about. So we did a little bit more of a kind of general.
That's fine.
But yeah, I guess things maybe that we talked about that haven't been discussed. Yeah, we said we would really start off with talking about where they're coming from at that point in time, and whether that's, like you said, because of sort of first-hand experience, or whether it's like family experience or through friends and stuff. And also the idea that it can be pretty fluid, so you might not be one of those descriptors the whole time. You might move between one day you're feeling a lot more scared, and then the next day maybe you're a bit ambivalent or whatever. And then really maybe using kind of discussions of different people's experiences to start to see it from someone else's point of view. So that you kind of realise, because I guess for all of us, we've all got such a personal experience of this that is so broad, and it's going to be exactly the same with any young people that you're working with. So that was what was ours, ambivalence, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. Again, it's rich for me. And what we're realising here, you know, we've got different layers on the kind of, the nuance of conversation here. It really is the primary medium for detached youth. we're not working in a building where we can open a cupboard and all sorts of games and whatever come pouring out. We're living and dying by, that was probably badly said, we're reliant very much on our kind of conversational skills. So what comes to mind now in terms of your description there was the potential, first of all, the recognition that all these kinds of behaviours, these five different attitudes, can just as likely exist in the same group. Now, that might mean instinctively we think it's going to be even more difficult to have conversations. But what it does mean is that there's the potential for playing a kind of a facilitation role. Perhaps using kind of questions like, well, what do you think about what so-and-so said? So we're encouraging a kind of a conversation between them, rather than conversations already always being mediated and coming to us and back to the individual. We're trying to create through our facilitation skills, the kind of things you would try to do in a workshop, so to speak. We're trying to get that kind of conversation between different young people. And then you've got this other really interesting idea. Well, if it's not you, could you imagine being that person? What do you think it's like for your granny? Yeah. Asking that person to adopt the kind of persona of a third person. It's almost like a bit of dramatic stuff. Those of you who are working in like the creative stuff, you know, this idea that we can kind of act out certain scenarios as a kind of a pedagogy, as a way of learning, you know, really, really interesting stuff that doesn't require any real tangible tools beyond this kind of sophisticated set of conversational interventions. So again, very, very rich, thank you. Let's do the last one. I think number five was...
That's Ashley and Marla. Invincibles. Ashley and Marla.
Can you give us a bit about your conversation for the last one?
Shall I go?
Yeah, please.
So I called it the Donald Trump group after, although he's not so invincible. So we did actually think that we might use that as an example at some point. Nice. But we talked about a lot of things, and a lot of the things have actually been touched on, especially the ability to move between the different groups, depending on how you're feeling or what's going on for you. But we also talked about not wanting to turn our invincible group into the fear group either, by making them feel less invincible, by making them fear death. And so we talked about being mindful of examples that we might use or language that we might use as well. That's not to avoid talking about what could happen, but just to be mindful of it. And we talked about, like, before anything happened, just for any young people coming into a detached youth, you know, a park, or for them to, as much as is possible, have an idea of what agreements there might be in place or what to expect before coming into it. Not in an authoritarian way, but just in a, this is how we need to do this and this is why, as gently as possible, really, so that there's no major shocks when people turn up. But yeah, we got on to just opening up a space for discussion and exploration safely around why people might feel invincible. And that might be because they're actually masking, you know, a distrust of the government. And actually, I'm not going to do anything that this government tells me because, and I'm going to, you know, it might not be a feeling of invincibility. It might be something else that is lying underneath that. But yeah, just where have they come from? And then we also talked about maybe, you know, in smaller groups, and again, as safely as you can do it, but those people who feel real fear, being able to talk about those experiences, their experiences, to those that feel invincible. So to try and create some kind of empathy so that somewhere, because, you know, you want those people who feel fear to actually be able to get out there as much as they can. So somewhere in the middle, I mean, it was so tricky, and in some ways there is no right answer, but to just try and like bring people together to listen to each other's perspectives. And I think that was it, really.
I have to say I'm hugely impressed by all her comments so far. There's a lot in that one as well, and just let me pick out a couple of pieces. There is no right answer at this. You know, this is, it's all philosophical territory. You know, there's no definitive answers. But actually, that lends itself to this kind of conversational discussion kind of way of working. And we should always remember that the word dialogue, it comes from the concept of learning. We enter into dialogue in order to learn something. It's kind of a truth-seeking thing. If you're closed off to what people are saying, there's no dialogue going on. But this idea that we learn better together, I think that's the kind of language that's so important in youth work. So often learning and education becomes individualized. But really one of the great contributions of youth work is to keep learning social. The other point that I picked up on was how it's so important not to exacerbate any kind of fears. So this kind of mindfulness that's nourished by exploring different perspectives, you know, different perspectives, different views, different opinions that might actually exist within the very group that you're working with. The point about agreements, I was kind of pleased that you moved to the word expectations. We know from the history of detached youth work that those who are more likely to be present on the streets are probably on the streets to some degree, at least, because they don't like kind of agreements, the kind of agreements that necessarily they have to sign on for. But that's not to say we can't make expectations of them. So there has to be some kind of discourse about that kind of stuff. But it seems to me, our geographers would tell you that the kind of language of agreement, it fits a bit more for inside work. And another thing that comes to mind is something that I learned from working with street workers in Hungary, in Eastern Europe at the time. And they talked often about what they call present tense functioning. And what that means is that you've got to deal with young people in the moment. If you've had some problems with them not committing to, you know, to the expectations that you've got on them, to sort of try to respect some of the things that we're talking about in terms of the guidance. If you were to start off the conversation the next time you saw them by an, I hope you're not going to do that again, that's not conducive to further conversations. So present tense functioning means we leave everything behind that's happened before and we start again, we start again. And once young people know that they can always start again, there's much more chance that we're going to have profitable conversations. Right. Can't believe how quickly this time has gone. I just want to do a couple more minutes with your permission, just to think about how what I've done and what you've done with each other today, you could do with each other in your teams or whatever. And what I'm really speaking about is the idea that just as I've done, and just as I'm sure many of you will have done in the past, if you think very carefully about the stories that your colleagues are telling them, you can ask them questions independent of working with young people, perhaps after a session. Why did he do this? Why did he do that? So there's something important about the methods that we use in conversation with young people that we actually need to use in our conversations with one another. This is the kind of meat and drink of reflective practice. You can do that kind of reflection as a group. So you really need to give yourself time, because the kind of anxieties that we've talked about are going to be present in your lives and in your professional practice. So learning how to use questions to support each other and help each other to think critically is such an important part of professional practice as well. You've got to dig out the kind of opinions, dig out the perspectives, dig out the values. And you know, the benefit of all that is you all become increasingly self and other aware. That's what it is to do professional work. I'll probably finish with this kind of idea that, you know, it is very much, if I was to use that kind of social work metaphor, a kind of a case-by-case basis. So you've got to be on your toes, you've got to be thinking, you've got to be, you know, collaborating with your colleagues who perhaps might, in advance, you might say, well, you know, you ask these kinds of questions, I'll ask those kinds of questions. So you're creating a range of stimuluses that are all designed to get young people thinking as well as possible. Okay, I'm going to hand back now to Rhianne. I think she wants to do a tiny little bit of evaluation for today. And while she's, are you going to use the...
Yes, I'm going to do the Mentimeter, so I'm going to share my screen, but you can still talk in the background.
Let me just ask Steve, my colleague from the Fed. Steve, have you got any knowledge about the session that follows this one? Let me just start off and you can add in a little bit. What we're going to do next time, Steve will chip in a bit in a second. We're going to do some more scenarios. But what I would encourage you to do over the next week is actually try to collect some experiences or to imagine some scenarios that you think that you might come across in the context in which you work, and then bring them with you. And then we can shift this from scenarios that I and others have created to ones that really are in the kind of context of your own experience or whatever. Steve, do you want to chip in?
Yeah, sure. So Emily's running the session on the 12th of October, and I think she's going to look at broadening. That's why I put that little narrative in the chat, because I think what we've been talking about today is areas of our practice that are transferable skill sets. And so Emily's going to perhaps do some things around violence, around antisocial behaviour, just so we can explore using the same skill set in these different areas, because some of them are bound by different types of legislation, different types of community response. And so she's also going to look at that kind of off-duty boundaries as well, and you know, how we work against criminalising young people in relation to activities that might be involved in empowering young people with regards to those things and their place in communities. So that's kind of a bit of an overview of next week.
That's great. So Rhianne, do you want to just do your little bit now? I want to try and find this reference to the
So just before we finish, guys, I just want to do a quick evaluation on Mentimeter. This is just mainly for the benefit of our funders, trainers, and for participants for future sessions. So I'm just going to share my screen. So I'll post the link in the chat, but go to menti.com and post the code at the top to fill in the evaluation questions.
Sorry, you want us to do that now? We're going to Menti.
Yes, please.
Okay.
But I mean, if you don't get around to doing it today, I'll send out the links for it after the session.
Right, I'm just going to put this reference into the interesting piece of legislation from London. That might be of use to you. I certainly referenced it. And the other things, I'm hoping that Steve's put them in, the Fed link and whatever else. But if you've got any kind of commentary about any further questions, of course, send them to the generic email address at the Fed, and we'll try to get back. We're a voluntary organisation comprised of people who are detached youth workers, who've got histories of detached youth work. We're all volunteers, but we're there as a kind of a community of practice to support detached youth workers and advance detached youth work. So please do look to the Federation for Detached Youth Work as a sounding board, as a place where you can get support and advice.
And just on that, anyone that's interested, I know you're busy typing things as you speak, but anyone that's interested in contributing to the Fed blog, again, just contact us by the info@fdyw.org.uk and we can have that conversation so we can get some of those people published.
So we'll put the details of the chat together. I'm going to send you the documentation that I used to talk to you, the notes from Chris and a few other bits and pieces. But in preparation for next week, just have a think about what's happening. Think about the stuff that you've come across. Think about the scenarios that perhaps you've got some concerns about that might not yet have happened, but you think could happen. And bring them with you. We've got a few others prepared, as Steve said, a few about relationships with partner organisations and the police or whatever, yep. Perhaps dealing with more difficult situations on the street. So we'll bring a few, but hopefully you guys can bring a few as well. So, Rhiann, are there any further questions or is there just this one?
Yeah, that was just it for my part.
Okay. So that just leaves me to, we've run over by 10 minutes. I'm always amazed how time flies. It's one of my subjects, actually. But thank you very much for engagement. And again, I've spent quite a lot of time with people recently who were very much starting off in understanding detached youth work, but the quality and the richness of the commentary that you made was all super. I think we're probably going to have a recording of this and you'll be able to connect back and listen to the things that people have said. And I'll write a few notes up as well.
Yeah, I'll send out everything after. Once you've sent it to me, I'll send it to everyone, including the recording.
Yeah. So I'll probably finish with just this. The detached youth work is really, really important at the moment. Clearly, because so many building-based services are closed, and you know, it's not without—it's not a coincidence at all that many local authorities have absolutely stuck their neck out and said these are essential services. To me, they always were, and I hope that in the future we can make the case that they always will be. So remember that you're doing good work, and drop us a line at the Fed if we can help you with anything else. So thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank Bye. You very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thank Can you. I ask, is all of the trainings going forward, are they all different? Because I know you've got one. That the one following the 12th, it says that it's from 2 till 6. I'm sure it says that. So is that, does it go back over stuff or is it a completely different?
Can I just ship in there? So on the list that I've got, so far, this is the Partnership for Young London network invites that's gone out. So, Rhiann, you might be able to know whether that's the case. So, there was today's. Next week on the Monday is a further scenario practice looking at different issues like antisocial behaviour, violence, young people treat one another kind of indifferently, criminalisation, boundaries, working with other agencies. And the one after that on the 19th says that it's detached youth work preparation for the winter and a possible second lockdown. And that's Emily again. And so I think I'm kind of behind the scenes again next week and Graham on the following one after that. So I think that they're part of it. And that's 2 till 3:30 I've got on my list.
Yeah,
I can change that.
I think it's also worth mentioning that there'll be, and there is currently, a whole series of other detached youth work focused training offers from the Fed. One that I can speak for is the stuff about doing your research. Somebody mentioned it earlier on today, how you can do that kind of preparatory work so that when you're going out, you've got your confidence is as high as possible. Community profiling, those stuff. But again, we'll make sure that all those other things are circulated. And it reminds me to mention, put it in your diary, 28th of October, an opportunity to come together with English-speaking colleagues from all over the world for an international webinar on detached and street-based work. So I'll make sure you get that one as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
So, Steve, are you doing next week then?
I think next week, let me just check. Yeah, I'm behind the scenes next week. Emily's doing it, but I'm behind the scenes, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Rhiann?
Yeah.
I think my only observation is we could have easily done another half an hour, do you know what I mean?
And, okay.
I think sometimes we worry about how, you know, it's a challenge to spend a long time looking at computers, isn't it? But, you know, especially when people start talking, time seems to fly a little bit. And but it was what they were talking about today was high quality. So